The Gospel of the Lord. So yesterday, making comments about virtue and strength and moral holiness, in a sense, is about the configuration of the person, and that morals are often a way a person acts are symptoms or signs of the person's moral character. And that doing good doesn't necessarily prove goodness, and doing bad doesn't necessarily prove badness. That it is far more complex. And it's weird because one of the symptoms of spiritual disorder is envy, the sin of envy. And so in the seven deadly sins and then the seven virtues, I mentioned a few weeks ago that they're not opposites of each other. That the virtues represent goodness, which is infinitely greater than evil. That we don't live, as I said 2 days ago or 3 days ago, that good and evil are not equal opposites. That good is the glory of God. And that evil is a parasite. It takes a good thing and twists it. And envy has this very similar characteristic. It desires a good thing beyond its value. And you realize the limitations of a value of a thing because sometimes when a person in seeking it also then is willing to do things that are obviously contrary to the glory of God for its purpose. And the strange thing about envy is the weird way in which we can justify our behavior when we're acting out of envy. Here comes the dreamer. Let us kill him. These are his brothers talking. It's because of something, though, very, very painful. The most holy of relationships, one of the most holy of relationships in the world, is the love of a parent for a child. And when you've got 12 sons, it's really hard to love them equally. Now, you understand why Jacob Israel, is his name, Jacob Israel, Israel loves his son of his old age a little bit more than the other guys. I mentioned a few weeks ago that sometimes a parent has to love a different child differently because of the circumstances that the child is in. The way in which my little sister received more attention from my parents than my brother and I did because of the necessity of the circumstance. Well, Joseph represents, in a sense, God's continual blessing on his family, that even in old age, that he still has a child, and you can't entirely blame Jacob for loving this particular child with a little bit more affection than the others. But herein lies the great problem with seeking fatherhood in this world. And the Jewish people immediately recognized it. That what would always come down to the ultimate breakdown of the 12 tribes of Israel, the peoples of Israel, is the strife between them. Whom does God love more? And by the time of Jesus, one of the only tribes that's left is Judah. And one of the reasons why all the other tribes hate them is because, oh, and so why do you get the king? Why do you get the royal line in your family? Why is the temple in your people? And this envy destroys civilizations, it destroys families, and the really sad thing is that when we're in the throes of it, we know we are acting stupidly, but we have an incredibly hard time to break the cycle. Because especially if it has something to do with whether or not mom and dad love me more than my brother or sister or something, that goes down to our very identity. Whether or not we're loved. And you can't just say to somebody, it doesn't matter, because it does. If you say to somebody that the fight over the inheritance doesn't matter, they're in the end, they will ultimately admit it has nothing to do with the money. It has to do with on what level did mom and dad love me. And but then you can see why it becomes so pernicious is because they want more and more and more, and in their desire to be loved, they will destroy anyone around them with a clear conscience. They will be able to justify it by saying, well, I'm just fighting for my rights. And this is why we must never, ever believe the nonsense that says that it doesn't matter what you believe just as long as you're a good person. These are good people doing horrible things. But if we know that God is our Father, if we know that God is our Father, and that there is a limitless store of His love for all of us, and that He knows how to love each and every single one of us in the precise way that we need, then when we have that demon of envy coming up in our hearts, then it becomes our moral responsibility to fight it back, to deny it, and then in this Lenten season, to starve it to death if necessary, to be willing to lose a little bit of experience of love in this world so that we can be open and ready to be able to love how God, to receive the love that God is really giving us. There's a great line from St. Augustine, which I don't quite tire of using. It's that God wants to love us, but He can't. He wants to give us so many good things, but He can't because our hands are full. And you get actually, and this is a really weird thing, Jesus harkens us all the way back to the book of Genesis in today's gospel. If you remember what made humanity succumb to the temptation of the serpent in the garden, for some strange reason, certain theologians had something thought that the fall had something to do with sex, which is really crazy. Maybe they just got so preoccupied with naked people they couldn't think of anything different. But in the book of Genesis, what the serpent tempts Adam and Eve with is the statement, "You will be like gods." And then he also uses the double threat, which is very common in the pagan world, is that the gods want to keep you down. That God doesn't want you to gain knowledge. God doesn't want you to ascend to a new state of consciousness in some kind of Paulo Coelho, Eckhart Tolle nonsense. You know, like God doesn't want you to ascend into spiritual wisdom. No. That's not it at all. But when we have an ego problem, it's really easy for us to believe conspiracy theories. It's really easy. And so when he touches the ego that says, you will be powerful, and God wants to keep you back. You know that story about Prometheus, where the gods didn't want Prometheus to become powerful? And so then when Prometheus got fire, then Zeus punished him for eternity? Or in the Babylonian myths, it's very similar. The gods create human beings so that they could become subjugated to them. But in the Jewish and the Christian tradition, God creates us to bring us the fullness of life. That the only obstacle to the fullness of my life is my own pride. And you see this now fulfilled in Jesus' parable about the vineyard. They want to keep the vineyard for themselves. This is ours. He sends messengers indicating that this stuff is mine and I want my standard tribute. And then when they see the sun, what's the words that come out of their mouth? The heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance will be ours. In fact, this underlines a great deal of modern atheism. When we kill God, then we are free, and we are now God. And it's a very terrifying thing to think about, that all of our internal rebellion to God has this almost hidden desire to kill Christ when he comes to us. Which is why we mustn't be so judgmental to the scribes and Pharisees. We all do it. They've just reached that point. But we all want to kind of thrust him out of our life when it seems that he seems to be taking too much. But he's not taking too much. We're too small, and what we think we have is what we think we have. He takes all of us to give us more. And it takes a tremendous trust in him to trust that when he's taking these things from us, that what he's planning to do is to give us more. And the way God reveals it is by revealing that there is no envy in God. God is jealous because he loves you, but he's not envious. There is nothing that you have that he desires. Which is why when he reveals his love, it's everyone taking from him, and he's only giving. When we look at the cross, we see a guy who's getting no payment whatsoever on the transaction with us. And yet he freely gives. We have to exorcise out of our minds this thought that somehow God is our enemy. We are our own worst enemy. And the Son has come to set us free.